Welcome to CE on ReachMD. This activity titled, Case-Based Approach, Optimizing Cardio-Kidney Metabolic Outcomes in Individuals with Type 2 Diabetes and Chronic Kidney Disease, is provided by MedCon International. Prior to beginning the activity, please be sure to review the faculty and commercial support disclosure statements, as well as the learning objectives.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rajiv Agarwal, Professor Emeritus, Indiana University School of Medicine, and staff physician at the VA Medical Center in Indianapolis, Indiana, USA. How we detect CKD in patients with type 2 diabetes and what is the optimal treatment approach for these patients is what we are going to learn through a case today. This is CE on ReachMD, and together with me is Dr. Kos.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kos. I'm an associate professor at Universitat Autònoma de Barcelona. I'm an IGP in practice. So for me, it's also an honor to be in this program today.
We're going to start with a case that you might see in practice. 57-year-old male executive with a history of long-standing hypertension and obesity being treated with losartan 100 milligrams once a day and amlodipine 10 milligrams once a day. He presents to his primary care physician with chest pain, BMI is 29 kilos per meter square, blood pressure 129 over 78, and he has trace fetal edema. He is referred to cardiology. He undergoes a treadmill test, which is positive for inducible ischemia. He's taken for cardiac cath, which reveals significant right coronary artery disease. A stent is placed and he's discharged. In the second week, he follows up with his primary care physician. He gets a routine screening which identifies dyslipidemia and new-onset type 2 diabetes. He's placed on a statin, aspirin, and his hypertension is managed without changing any medicines to his regimen. His diabetes is treated with metformin and empagliflozin 10 milligrams once a day. Following year, he returns for a follow-up visit. His creatinine is 1.2. His EGFR 67. He's discharged with no further action, blood pressure 126 over 72, BMI 29.6, HDL 45, LDL 74. 8 months later, he presents to the emergency room with a myocardial infarction. Upon admission, a dipstick test is positive for proteinuria. A subsequent urine albumin to creatinine ratio confirms significant albuminuria at 700 milligrams per gram. So here's a patient who really had a myocardial infarction, who had type 2 diabetes. And the question is, who do we screen for chronic kidney disease? Clearly, his EGFR was more than 60, so he didn't really qualify for diagnosis of CKD in a patient with type 2 diabetes, but he never had screening for USCR or dipstick or whatever at the first visit when he should have had. All the guidelines say the same thing, that screen the patient for albuminuria at the time of diagnosis and at least annually thereafter. So, Dr. Kos, in your practice, would you think that this patient would have been screened for albuminuria for a diagnosis of CKD?
Yes, of course. This is a kind of patient we normally could see in our practice in the primary care setting. Of course, it's a patient that when came already had an important vascular disease, has been admitted at hospital for a coronary artery disease. And I think that at 2 weeks after, it was this onset of type 2. And any patient in our clinic that has been diagnosed by type 2 require some assessment. One of the assessments we are doing is exploring what's going on in the kidney. It means to do EGFR estimation, glomerular filtration rate calculation, and also allow us to know what is the function of the kidney, and also if there's any damage now running in the kidney as well. So that for us, UACR are the parameter we are using normally, but of course that is bringing two different dimensions of what is going on in the kidney. So of course, any patient we have in our clinic at the diagnosis moment, and also in the follow-up, we are doing that kind of testing. So I think it's appropriate to be considered probably at the beginning to do kind of testing a baseline. That is an important aspect to keep in mind.
So you raise two very important questions. One is the assessment of kidney function, which is through the GFR. And the other one is to assess kidney injury or possibly endothelial dysfunction through the assessment of UACR. So if you have a lot of UACR, say more than 300, then it's possible that patient has some kidney injury. If you're in the microalbuminuria range, what we call A2 albuminuria, it could be more endothelial dysfunction. What you're saying is that we should have screened him right at get-go.
Because when you're screening, it's because you are understanding something behind that screening. And that means that allow you to stratify what's the risk of that individual you have in front of you. And it means that probably your actions must be different according to what you are detecting. So screening, why? Because we have a reason to do something, because we have solutions.
So, you know, it's very interesting. What you say is that albuminuria we should be screening for in everybody who has new onset diabetes. This patient wasn't. Before 2019, we only had ACE and ARBs. And yes, we have had these guidelines for screening of UACR for at least a few decades now. But since 2019, we have built more and more evidence that we can impact the lifetime course of kidney disease and cardiovascular disease in particular in these individuals who we can detect early, right? Now that we have detected CKD in this individual, you know, he has 700 milligram per gram A3 albuminuria. Let's talk about the treatment in our case who has both type 2 diabetes and CKD. So some people says, oh, the patient is on statin, aspirin, SGLT2 inhibitor. It's pretty good. You know, he's receiving the standards of care. And why bother with more medications that are not going to make that much of a difference? So do we have new evidence now that can make an impact on this individual?
I think that, of course, the kidney is something that for primary care physicians, we don't feel really aware about it. I think that having solutions available, it provides more sense to be more focused on the kidney. The story with the SGLT2 inhibitors is a clear example, something that was considered for management type 2 diabetes. And then you observe in these cardiovascular outcome trials benefits in the kidney, something it was opening new windows. And of course, new studies has been designed just to provide proper answers of that. At the same time, we know about the GLP-1 receptor agonists, injectables at the beginning. We now have oral formulations. We have dual peptides. So we have a lot of things. And all of them include in their trials what's going on in the kidney in those participants. And we know there are also benefits on that persons that has been participating in the trial. So this is bringing evidence about the benefit of that, and this is translated into the different guidelines and algorithms, also in the guidelines in the primary care. And also we have this finerenone as a compound that is also having an impact, is also very relevant because also project the benefits in the kidney. So now, of course, it's point that probably those clinicians in the primary care setting that were not really familiar with that medication or with that beneficial effects, probably be more tailored, more educated, how to understand how that medications could be beneficial for those patients that are in that situation. So it's just closing the loop. We are screening for something because we have a solution we can use in that individuals.
Very good. So two things that we see, we have four pillars of care. Two of them are medicines to treat diabetes, and two of them are blocking the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, right? And it turns out that both of the diabetes medications were kind of discovered accidentally because the regulators mandated trials to show cardiovascular safety, and lo and behold, we actually have better safety than placebo, which means that they are protective. So we weren't really designing these trials to show benefits. We were simply trying to design it to show no harms because of the prior things. And we show benefits on both the kidney and the heart. Now, finerenone was different because it was deliberately designed to look at the addition of this molecule on top of the existing therapies to show. And, you know, now we have the embarrassment of riches. For those just tuning in, you're listening to CE on ReachMD. I'm Dr. Rajiv Agarwal, and here with me is Dr. Xavier Koss. We are discussing the screening of kidney disease in people with type 2 diabetes and the latest data emerging from trials such as Confidence presented at EASD and how it may be implemented in clinical practice using a patient case. So the question we get asked often is, why simultaneous start of SGLT2 inhibitor and finerenone? And this is on top of ACE inhibitors and angiotensin receptor blocker therapy. And the answer is quite simple. Where we have multiple therapies that have to be added, if they're added sequentially, people simply don't get on all those therapies. We know this from hypertension combination therapies. We know this from heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, where there are multiple therapies to be added. For example, in people with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, the guideline is that use some of all instead of all of some before the patient gets out of the hospital. But we have no such data in people with chronic kidney disease with type 2 diabetes and albuminuria. So we said that if we use simultaneous therapy, can we demonstrate the greater efficacy of starting them together? And can we also demonstrate safety? And now we have done a trial called the Confidence Trial, in which we randomized people to either finerenone alone or empagliflozin alone, or both. All these people have type 2 diabetes and kidney disease, albuminuria in the range of 100 to 5,000, eGFR between 30 and 90. And what we are looking at is the change from baseline in albuminuria from baseline to day 180. Compared to finerenone alone or empagliflozin alone, we see between a 29 to 32% greater reduction in UACR when we use the combination from the get-go. There is an initial GFR dip, about 5-6 millimeters with the combination therapy. And this is expected because both these treatments reduce blood pressure, about 7.5. And the GFR dip is what you would expect. Just like if you're using a beta blocker, the heart rate reduction is expected. The reduction in eGFR is an expectation when you start finerenone and SGLT2 inhibitor together. It's not a reason to stop therapy unless the patient has symptomatic hypertension or has a clinical acute kidney injury. So when you're starting these therapies, you have to be cautious and sort of monitor the blood pressure in these people on a continuous basis to make sure that because these patients are getting hypertensive, they are not also experiencing kidney failure. But if we monitor the blood pressure, you monitor the USCR, we can see 30% reduction in USCR at day 14, which is really the ADA guideline of having at least 30% reduction in these individuals. Half the patients will have at least 30% reduction in 2 weeks, which we have never seen in any clinical trial before. So there's an advantage of starting combination therapy simultaneously, but what it also tells you is it's never too early to start the second drug. You don't have to wait a month or two or whatever to start the two drugs together. In this particular individual, who we discover a year later that he had 700 milligrams, it's possible that if he had used these combination therapies right from the get-go, we could have reduced his risk of cardiovascular disease progression. And, you know, at least from the finerenone trials, Figaro trial in particular, we show that there's a reduction in the risk of cardiovascular death, of myocardial infarction, heart failure hospitalization in these individuals who have type 2 diabetes and CKD. Now, some people ask us whether GLP-1 RAs act independently. So we've really never done any trials to look at GLP-1 RA on top of three pillars of care. So what we have done best is in Confidence trial, 23% of the people were on GLP-1 RA and the remaining were not. And we asked the question whether the GLP-1 RA modified the treatment response in terms of reduction in USCR or the adverse effects or the serious adverse events. And the answer was neither was modified. In other words, GLP-1 RAs seem to be acting independently of the other three treatments. So it goes to show that in the real world, if we combine these therapies early, we can reduce the lifetime burden of cardiovascular disease and kidney disease progression. So before we wrap up, let's each offer a final take-home message. Dr. Xavier, what do you hope our listeners will leave with today?
I think it's important to keep strong messages. And one is why we have to screen. And I think it's clear in what our dialogue has been explained. The second is how to do it. Okay. And also we have to understand that we have two parameters that are going to provide different information that are going to be complementary in understanding what is the stratification of the risk of that individual. So I think is we are doing that two aspects because at the end we are detecting individuals with risk and then we have solutions that has been just mentioned. We have to consider in our formulary to use it in clinical practice. But at the same time, I think it's very key, in my opinion, that probably we are not really familiar of these compounds. That I think it invites us that probably we have to have better communication with those colleagues that are around us, maybe that kidney units, that nephrologists we have around, and have a better communication in terms to understand how we are can invite my patients to start using that solutions because I know how these compounds are working and I can be embracing them in terms to start using in their management in daily basis. So I think that is also inviting you at that moment, I mean, representing a kidney specialist that will be together in that journey, trying to help our patients living with that condition.
So great points. I look at the awareness of blood pressure and cholesterol and the cessation of smoking. And we look at the A1C in diabetes. But there are very few people who know UACR or proteinuria or dipsic proteinuria. They're sort of the awareness of it is not as high as blood pressure, cholesterol, smoking. So that's one piece of it. Second part is that if we impact the UACR early, we can have lifetime benefits. One way to think about it is where there is smoke, there is fire. And what UACR is telling us, there's smoke. And the fire is in the kidney and the cardiovascular system. In the past, we only had ACE and ARBs, but now we have three other therapies to quench that fire. I think adding them early to let that fire not burn the cardiovascular and the kidney system down is really the key message. And that's all the time we have today. So I want to thank our audience for listening. And thank you, Dr. Kass, for joining me and sharing all of your valuable insights and expertise.
Thank you very much.
You have been listening to CE on ReachMD. This activity is provided by MedCon International. To receive your free CE credit or to download this activity, go to reachmd.com/CME. Thank you for listening.